Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I've been told that they're peeing in the hallways, in the bathroom. That for some reason, I'm not sure why, there was blood all over the place.
An investigation into South LA schools reveals a big, or rather small, and unsanitary problem. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, November 6, 2014. I'm Priyanka Deo. A private art collection worth more than $500 million is headed to the LA County Museum of Art. The collection will eventually be housed in a new building at LACMA. Stephanie Case was at the museum for the announcement.
Masterpieces by Claude Monet, Cubist portraits by Picasso, and Edward Manet's first painting will all soon join LACMA's permanent collection. The collection comes from donor Gerald Parencio. It's the biggest gift in LACMA's history and is one of several changes set to come to the museum. Yesterday, LA County's Board of Supervisors decided to help fund a new building at LACMA. The building, which will open in 2023, was commissioned by the museum's CEO and director, Michael Govan, and designed by Swiss architect Peter Zumthor. The design is inspired by the free-flowing form of the La Brea tar pits next door to LACMA.
I asked him to create a museum that had no obvious front and therefore no obvious back. That way no culture is in the front and no culture is in the back. This organic shape can be approached from the park, from the street, from any side, and there's an equality and an equivalence to all the galleries in that sense and to every culture that's represented at the museum.
The Board of Supervisors unanimously agreed to spend $125 million of county money on the new building. Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky says the new structure will distinguish LACMA.
This new addition to the museum is going to make it one of the most iconic buildings and one of the most significant art museums in the country.
While $125 million of the $600 million budget will be publicly funded, the board says the construction on Zumthor's building will create jobs and help the county's economy. Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas says the arts are an economic engine fueling Los Angeles.
The arts basically spell LA. Arts happens to be one of the sectors, the industry sectors, that drive the LA economy in a huge, huge, huge way.
Govan, the museum's director, believes that public funding of the arts is not only a good financial move, but it's also key to LA's identity.
I'm very proud that Los Angeles County has that holistic view about the role culture plays in our everyday life. My feeling is that culture is not an add-on, it's a necessity. We are cultures. We have culture. Art is essential to our life and our aspirations.
Select pieces from Gerald Parencio's collection will debut at LACMA next spring. Once it's built, the new museum will become the full collection's permanent home. Stephanie Case, Annenberg Radio News.
Plans for a major construction project in Hollywood may be in jeopardy after state geologists confirm that an active earthquake fault lies underneath. The fault runs directly below the proposed Millennium Hollywood skyscraper project. The city council approved designs for the 35 and 39-story buildings last year. The project has been on hold while geologists completed their survey. The city building department says it will decide whether to let construction go forward after it reviews the data. Two years ago, Mayor Eric Garcetti promised to make City Hall sleeker, faster, and more effective. Today, he announced what he hopes is a simple way to make that a reality. ARN's Jonathan Tolliver reports.
Call it a million-dollar suggestion box. The mayor and city officials unveiled an innovation fund today that gives city employees money to fix broken or out-of-date systems.
And we all have that moment at work when we're doing the job the way we're told, but we're thinking, I know how to do this better. Now I'm saying to the city's workforce today, tell us.
City employees will submit ideas via a new website. From there, city planning officials will decide which ideas will get the money to make them a reality. City Council member Bob Blumenfield said the city is taking a measured approach to doling out dollars.
At some point the money runs out, and then we're faced with, as we come together to put together next year's budget, if it's been successful, we'll probably want to put additional funds in.
He says the fund could reinvigorate city employees bogged down by slow systems.
Well, my hope is that the success will go beyond just the projects, but will actually help change the culture of the city.
But USC Urban Planning Professor Martin Krieger isn't so sure. He's seen a lot of these initiatives come and go.
No initiative ever does what it says what it'll do. So that always gets you in trouble.
Krieger says that some great employee ideas, like firing the boss, won't ever see the light of day. A group of sanitation workers were the first to benefit from the Innovation Fund when they successfully replaced old paper systems with tablets and apps. Jonathan Tolliver, Annenberg Radio News.
The CDC gave South Los Angeles a $3 million grant this morning to improve health in the region. The money went to the South LA Community Coalition. As Taylor Haney reports, the coalition will distribute the award to a variety of local organizations.
Fifth graders from MLK Elementary School kicked off today's celebration in King Park.
Thank you. Welcome to today's important announcement about improving health in our community.
They were a tough act to follow, but Congressional Representative Karen Bass stepped up to reflect on how health disparities look.
On one corner, there's a liquor store, and catty corner to that liquor store is the Vita dialysis unit. Now, why is there a dialysis unit in our community? It's there because it reflects a health disparity.
The LA Public Health Department and the South LA Community Coalition hope to address health disparities with a $3 million vote of confidence from the CDC. Marquise Harris-Dawson is the director of Community Coalition, and it falls to him and his colleagues to distribute the funds.
But we really want to look for places that have assets like beautiful parks like this one, that have community organizations like this neighborhood does, and where we see disparities. And so that's where we'll be looking here in South LA.
Those organizations include public health clinics like the St. John's Well Child and Family Center and LA County Substance Abuse Prevention and Control. The money is also for healthier lifestyles in programs like the 100 Citizens Group, which builds exercise equipment at local parks. Mother of two, Veronica Jimenez from Westmont, believes the grant will improve health access for her family.
You know, my mother has diabetes, and I know how she has to go out of the city, you know, just to get the resources. So for me to have them, like, around the corner, it's, you know, like I say, it's great.
And she hopes that new exercise equipment from the 100 Citizens Group will give her kids a reason to get off their iPhones and out to the park. Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
Nearly 200,000 people are still waiting to see if they can receive medical health care coverage under the Affordable Care Act. That's down from close to 1 million applicants just months ago. Applications are supposed to be processed within 45 days, but many have been waiting as long as 6 months to a year. Jim Manja is the CEO of St. John's Well Child and Family Center. St. John's is a nonprofit organization that helps provide health care for people in South LA who are not yet covered under the Affordable Health Care Act.
Nobody's telling us why there's a backlog. No one's telling us why the state was not prepared for this. No one is telling us when the backlog is going to be remedied.
The state admitted in July that it was unprepared for the surge in applications. Healthcare officials are currently looking for a fix that could clear up the backlog and speed up the process. Hikers discovered the body of a missing Fox executive in Palmdale this week. Gavin Smith disappeared in May 2012 after leaving a friend's house north of Los Angeles. Authorities have yet to determine the cause of death, but they now believe they know how and why Smith was killed. Smith's car was recovered from a storage facility in Simi Valley in February 2013. That prompted the Sheriff's Department to declare him dead this year. The Los Angeles city attorney wants to take out the trash. Today, he announced a new task force to tackle the illegal dumping of waste in the streets. Rebecca Gibeon reports.
You can't walk through the streets of South LA or Boyle Heights without noticing the piles of trash in alleyways and on corners. Dumping of waste in alleys, on streets, or in the LA River is illegal. LA City Attorney Mike Fuhrer announced today a new task force that will focus on removing the waste and prosecuting offenders.
Going to aggressively pursue through the strike force and our prosecutorial efforts anyone who dumps in a neighborhood. But I want to state that other forms of dumping, including toxic dumping into waterways, threatens people's health and safety. Our families deserve better than that.
Along with 10 other agencies, the LA City Attorney's Office is identifying 9 chronic dumping spots around the city. They hope to clean up the sites, talk to the communities, and develop enforcement strategies such as putting cameras in alleyways or encouraging residents to call when they see illegal dumping. Frank Matalajan, the deputy director of the city attorney's office, says the task force plans to start evaluating the sites as soon as possible.
We're starting with 30 days. We will evaluate the sites, get them cleaned up.
Illegal dumping can carry high fines and heavy cleanup costs. Some South LA residents, like Jesus Marquez, like the idea of the new task force and think the illegal dumping hurts the aesthetic of the neighborhood.
It makes the community look really bad. You don't even want to be in that street, you know?
Ernestine Marks, another resident of South LA, thinks the trash dumping has a wide impact on the community.
I wish the people would learn not to put trash in other people's land, because they do. If they see something empty or empty apartment, they throw their trash, and it's awful. It looks ugly. It's not healthy.
Marks hopes the task force will actually do what they set out to do.
We just have to see what they're going to do and how they're going to do it and how soon they're going to do it.
The task force hopes community members will pitch in and do their share by picking up after themselves and helping others to do the same. Rebecca Gibian, Annenberg Radio News.
LAUSD administrators ignored warnings that a new district data system wasn't ready to launch, according to a report released today. The system, known as MISIS, caused outrage in recent weeks after it led to a number of issues with class scheduling and attendance and caused a week-long delay of 650,000 students' report cards. According to the consultant group that prepared the report, the district's leadership gave the go-ahead for the project's launch despite evidence of significant problems. A new report shows nearly 14% of LA County residents experienced multiple traumatic events as children. The report from the Center of Youth Wellness says childhood abuse, neglect, and other negative experiences can affect a student's performance in the classroom. Joshua Kaufman is a social worker with LAUSD's mental health services. He says it's vital to reach kids while they're still in school.
Mental health services and supports can be instrumental in helping students to reduce some of the ways that they might respond to triggers that they might experience in the classroom.
The report says changes in the brain caused by trauma make it difficult for students to learn. LAUSD's budget for mental health services such as counseling dropped 15% this school year. And the problem might not be getting any better anytime soon. California hospitals say they're admitting more kids than ever for mental illness. The Office for Statewide Health Planning and Development says that the rate of hospitalization for children aged 5 to 19 has climbed almost 43% since 2007. Many patients require intensive treatments for depression, bipolar disorder, and psychosis, and hospitals are struggling to find space to treat them. Mental health officials are unsure of what's behind this surge in admissions, which has serious implications for hospitals and insurance companies. Looks like it's time to take out that sunscreen again. Today reached a high of 90 degrees, cooling to the low 60s by evening. Friday and Saturday are going to be the same, with sunshine and highs hitting 90 degrees and gradually dropping to 60 by nightfall. Sunday will be a bit more comfortable, with 82 degrees as the high and a low of 60 degrees by nightfall. Later on Annenberg Radio News, the women of Troy head to LA Coliseum for a football match. Los Angeles Opera is rehearsing for a new production about an opera singer traveling by steamboat down the Amazon. Elizabeth Nonemaker sat in on their first full rehearsal.
Ladies and gentlemen, right, I need your attention, cast, Jose, Veronica.
In the middle of the room, stagehands spin a large, multi-leveled structure. Its roof is flat, and underneath there are many smaller rooms. The singers weave through the beams, climb up and down the ladder as it rotates through scene changes.
It's unusual for us to do something so large scale as to actually need to build in the rehearsal room. There is a full scale boat, essentially. We've built an ark, which is pretty major.
That's Lila Forlani, the stage manager for LA Opera, and this is the company's first full run-through of the production Florencia en el Amazonas. The rehearsal itself is intricately orchestrated, requiring a tight collaboration between singers, stagehands, the director, conductor, and the rehearsal pianist. For rising opera star Lisette Oropesa, it's exhilarating.
It's been beautiful. I haven't cried this much throughout a rehearsal process, ever. And this opera is not a tragedy, but the music is so beautiful, so emotionally packed, that as you're listening to it, you cannot help but just cry.
The music is rich, with soaring lines reminiscent of Puccini. But it's unlikely that opera buffs have heard it before. Composed by Daniel Catan, it's a relatively recent work that premiered in 1996. Grant Gershon, resident conductor, says that Florencia is based on stories by Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
So it takes place near the mouth of the Amazon, and the story follows these characters that are all taking this boat ride up the Amazon to the city of Manaus to hear the great opera singer Florencia Grimaldi. In the meantime, Florencia herself is a passenger, but nobody recognizes her.
Oropesa elaborates on what she hopes the audience will get from the opera.
It's a really beautiful production. There's everything from magic to miracles to a very human story, and I think everybody can relate to one or more of the characters. There are many, many characters on the boat.
Audiences can embark on this journey when Florencia en el Amazonas opens on November 22nd. The opera will run through December. Elizabeth Nonemaker, Annenberg Radio News.
The title of the upcoming Star Wars Episode 7 movie has been revealed. According to a Twitter announcement made this morning, Star Wars: The Force Awakens has finished principal photography. Disney CEO Bob Iger also announced today that Disney Pixar will release Toy Story 4 in June 2017. John Lasseter is slated to direct. The University of California's three-year tuition freeze looks to be over. UC President Janet Napolitano is proposing tuition hikes of as much as 5% a year for 5 years. Napolitano says the hikes will help cover rising costs and allow UCs to offer more classes so students can graduate on time, hire more faculty, and increase financial aid. UC regents are expected to approve the increase at a meeting later this month. For years, students in schools across South LA have been studying in unsanitary conditions and unsafe classrooms. An investigation into Inglewood Unified School District showed hallways drenched in urine, rats, and broken gym equipment. I spoke to Karen Fauché, investigative producer at NPR station KPCC, who went to multiple LA schools and saw just how bad of a state they're in.
I went to Inglewood High, and in the gym, there's two gyms. One is very nice, one not so nice. I mean, the first thing right. You notice is that there's no tiles. There's tiles missing on the roof. There's garbage everywhere. I went into the bathrooms, and the smell of urine, by the way, in the halls is pretty overwhelming. I've been told by staffers and students that they urinate in the halls because the bathrooms are so bad at times. And I have to tell you, one of the funny things was there was one bathroom that was gated off that's nice and clean, but I was told nobody's allowed to use it. They're afraid that the kids will get it dirty or something. So the smell of urine is pervasive. You can smell it. I've been told that they're peeing in the hallways in the bathroom. That for some reason, I'm not sure why, there was blood all over the place. I was told it had been there for 5 days, trash everywhere, fecal matter.
I read your article on rats at Inglewood, and it is very, very disturbing.
Sure. Inglewood Unified has had problems for years. That's not a news story. In 2012, it was so bad, the district was nearly broke. The state came in, Jerry Brown flooded the district with $30 million, and they started on a road of a state takeover. The state has taken it over. We're in year two of that, and they are on their third trustee. That is a person who's appointed by the state to take over Inglewood Unified.
Right.
The person right now is Don Brand. And what I have heard over and over from students, parents, employees, is that it is, some would say, even worse now than it was a year ago or two years ago.
Based on your investigations, what do you feel is the first step to solve this problem, or at least take a step to improve the problem, perhaps?
It's a district that has been troubled for years, but perhaps some first steps: bringing back the janitorial staff, bringing back the security staff. Those might be steps in the right direction. Now, enrollment is down. I've heard they've lost about a couple hundred kids just this year. I mean, they've dropped, I think, 5,000 or 6,000 in the past 9 years. I mean, this is a district in trouble, so they have to figure out something quick. Because remember, right, each student is worth about $10,000 of government money, so they're losing money every time they lose these students.
Right, right. Well, that's all the questions that I have for you, Karen. Do you have any final thoughts for us?
I don't. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Take care. Have a good day.
Thanks.
That was Karen Fauché, investigative producer at KPCC. Now it's time for our weekly Sports Minute with Evan Budrovich. Today, we look at another form of football as the USC women of Troy prepare for their soccer season finale against UCLA.
Our goal is to go out and just play. Just enjoy the game, enjoy the environment.
That's head coach Kidani McAlpine, who leads the women of Troy into a Friday night soccer match over at the Coliseum. Last weekend, USC clinched a playoff spot for the first time since 2010. They are now looking to upend UCLA, the defending national champions. Senior forward Alex Quincy is expecting a dogfight.
It's always the game we look forward to each season. It's going to be in the Coliseum on senior night, so it's going to be really exciting.
While the women of Troy have not lost a game on the road this year, they're under 500 at home. Coach McAlpine views this match as a great test for the NCAA tournament.
To learn how to compete at the right level, to play better soccer, even when it's ugly, find a way, and I think we've done that at the right time.
The first 5,000 fans receive a special USC football scarf as the women of Troy look to win their fifth straight game on the season. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
And now we check in with Eric Rubel to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Eric?
Thanks, Priyanka. First, Visions and Voices will present a wall of video magic with a special guest tonight. Also, the USC grad student pretrial hearings continue today, what the family's lawyer had to say about it. And finally, cars are now being printed by 3D printers. We'll have more tonight.
Thanks, Eric. Happy birthday to Monsieur Sax. 200 years ago today, Belgium instrument maker Adolphe Sax invented the saxophone. The instrument commonly associated with jazz was originally intended for military bands. Later orchestras used the sax to add an exotic element to their music. It wasn't until the early 20th century when bands popularized the saxophone into jazz music. Los Angeles students performed better on the California physical fitness test this year, according to a report by LAUSD. Students statewide took the test, which measures health in six categories. During the last school year, nearly 20% of fifth graders, 22.3% of seventh graders, and 29.6% of ninth graders in LAUSD schools checked off all six criteria. That's about 2% higher than the previous year, but still falls below the statewide figure. Today is also the 35th anniversary of National Public Radio's Morning Edition program and the birthday of this familiar jingle. Thousands of stories have been a part of Morning Edition over the years, but one element of the program that stayed consistent is its theme music. The composition was written by B.J. Lederman, who has gone on to create theme music for other NPR programs like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Car Talk. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Nia Frank, Janet Jamie, Fabi Meza, and Selena Say Reynolds.